Consider teaching trust in the home. Hey, welcome as we have another look into the life and message of Elizabeth Elliot, who called us to live to a higher standard each day, to not be satisfied with just a little empty religion in life as a shallow substitute for giving God our best. Our series continues in the coming weeks as we hear from family, from friends and others, influenced by Elizabeth's life and message. Hey, thanks for joining us again today. We continue with our series, The Call to Motherhood, today, as we think about how mother teaches trust and obedience to the call of motherhood. We'll also be hearing from Valerie Shepherd, Elizabeth's daughter, as she talks about raising kids, about two simple commands to teach young kids, about teaching obedience even to the strong-willed children. Does it work to try to reason with little children? Some encouragement to not give up, that coming later. First, though, let's join Elizabeth for part 7 of The Call to Motherhood, How a Mother Teaches Trust.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you today about how a mother teaches trust. I told you the story the other day about the TV show that I saw on polar bears, the mother polar bear setting an example for her cubs, and the cubs, in their very awkward, stumbling way, trying to imitate exactly what she did, walking across the ice, trying to catch fish with their paws, rolling and tumbling in the snow. And every now and then, the mother bear would cuff those little cubs. She'd give them a sort of a bat with her great big paw. And she was thereby establishing authority. Now, for polar bears, survival is a pretty serious business. And so the mother bear is responsible to see that those little cubs are able to survive in what would certainly seem a very hostile environment. Nothing but snow and ice and Arctic winds. And so she takes her responsibility very seriously in teaching those cubs. In fact, unfortunately, as I watched the program, I thought that mother bear takes her responsibility far more seriously than some of the mothers that I watch sometimes. You know what it's like when you go into a brawling household. Where did I get that word? Well, I got it out of the Bible. So what else is new? Back in Proverbs, the, 25th chapter and the 24th verse, it says, "Better to live in a corner of the housetop than have a nagging wife and a brawling household." Well, I think we all know what brawling households are like. Where everything's chaos, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of mess, there's a lot of lack of discipline, and it's not the kind of a house that most of us really enjoy visiting very much. You know how you can walk into a house and there's laundry all over the living room, there's ironing piled up on the dining room table, there are dishes in the sink, and the kids are playing games in the family room, and one of them has just gotten the vacuum cleaner out of the closet and is running it at his brother, and his brother's saying, "Hey, come on, get out of here, Mom!" And the mother is harried, trying to hold the baby and feed the two-year-old that's in the high chair, and the two-year-old is rubbing applesauce in his hair, and the baby is grabbing things on the counter, and the four-year-old is pulling the toilet paper from the bathroom out into the family room. And the mother is in despair. And she says to the visitor, "I can't manage these kids. Nobody listens to me. They don't hear a word I say. They don't obey me. What can I do?" What can you do? You know, they throw up their hands. And my heart goes out to a woman like that. My heart goes out to any mother with small children. There are a thousand things that she has to think of all at once, and she's got a more complicated job, it seems to me, than the pilot of a 747 with that elaborate dashboard or whatever you call it, control panel up there in the cockpit, has to think about. Among the vital lessons that that mother probably should have started sooner to try to teach is the lesson of trusting her word. The parents must learn to back up what they say by the way they live, and then with punishment or reward. They will show their trust in God by acceptance of His word as law. God means exactly what He says, and He expects us to trust Him and to obey Him, as the old gospel song says, "Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus." With God, truth-telling is a serious matter. Is truth-telling a serious matter in your home? Do you wink at what you call little white lies? Do you exaggerate? Do you tell little white lies yourself so that your children learn from you that truth is not really a very serious matter? Do you take merely a high view but not a strict view of truth? People say honesty is the best policy. But I would say that according to Scripture, if honesty is merely a policy, it doesn't amount to very much, does it? A policy is merely a procedure based primarily on temporal or material interest. Honesty has got to be more than mere policy in a Christian home. It's a principle. And according to Dante, and of course Dante doesn't have the last word on everything, but in Dante's picture of hell, the worst sin is treachery. And I'm not so sure but what he might be right about that. Remember what Jesus said about betraying the trust of a little child. He said it would be better for you to have a millstone around your neck than to cause one of these little ones to stumble. And one way, one serious way in which adults cause little children to stumble is by dishonesty. If you've been failing in this, confess it. Tell God you're sorry. Acknowledge you're wrong. Then confess it to your children. Tell them, look, it's going to be different from now on. I've learned something. I was wrong. I must teach you how important is truthfulness. And you must be truthful with that child. If you're going to teach the principle of honesty, you must practice the strictest honesty with that child. If you tell the child that he cannot go with you wherever it is you're going, and you give him a false reason, you're lying. Perhaps it's a reason that you cannot give the child, and you simply tell the child, I cannot give you the reason. You must trust me. The first principle in disciplining a child is eye contact. Let him know that he has your attention. Speak in a normal tone. Don't raise your voice. Speak once. If the child doesn't obey, then you must follow through. Be very careful that you don't make issues of things that you do not intend to follow through. Never make a rule that you do not intend to see obeyed. I told about a young mother in my living room not very long ago whose little child was going for things on the coffee table, a very common occurrence. Some mothers can say, don't touch, and the child knows that the mother means exactly what she says. Depending on the age of the child, if the child is just in the beginning stages of learning, then it seems to me that even when you're visiting in somebody else's home, it's appropriate to spank the child's hand. If you know that there's going to be a tremendous scream, then perhaps the best thing to do is to take the child out of the room, someplace where you can administer the punishment privately. Then hug the child, explain, if the child is old enough to understand an explanation, why it's not a good idea, but don't do unnecessary explaining. The book of Proverbs is full of wisdom about disciplining children. For example, in Proverbs 29, verses 15 and 17, the rod and reprimand impart wisdom, but a boy who runs wild brings shame on his mother. Verse 17, correct your son, and he will be a comfort to you, and bring you delights of every kind. Consistency is tremendously important. Chapter 30, verse 5, God's every promise has stood the test. He is a shield to all who seek refuge with Him. And if you are consistent in your word to your children, you will be a refuge to them, someone they know that they can depend on, a shield. And then, if you have made a mistake, if you have failed your child in some way, I think that it's legitimate to apologize to that child. I've heard it said, never apologize to your inferiors. Well, to me, that's baloney. We do need to confess our sins, even to a child. Conceal your faults and you will not prosper. Confess and give them up and you will find mercy. Like a starving lion or a thirsty bear is a wicked man ruling a helpless people. Here are some verses which certainly ought to give us pause. There are parents who lose their temper, and children are certainly a helpless people. Like a starving lion or a thirsty bear is a wicked man ruling a helpless people. A mother teaches trust to her children, first of all, by trusting God herself, by loving Him and obeying Him, and then by teaching the children that she means exactly what she says. Remember that every experience, if offered to Jesus, can be your gateway to joy.
The Call to Motherhood, Part 7, How Mother Teaches Trust. Later on, obedience to the call of motherhood. Right now, let's hear from Elizabeth's daughter, Valerie Shepherd. What are two simple commands that can help us in raising little ones to the glory of God?
Teach your children the first time to come. And two simple commands that you give to a little child, no and come. And he just looked at me. And I knew that his parents were working on training him. And I said, Jackson, come. And he just stood there. He's about 6-8 feet away from me. I said, come. He stood there and looked at me, and I stood there and looked at him. I knew that I didn't have the place to spank him because they were still discussing about spanking. But I just looked at him. I said, Jackson, Grandmama said, come. And he suddenly decided in his little heart, well, I guess I better go. And he came to me. There wasn't any crying. That teaching the first time obedience is very hard. I am not going to say it's easy. I don't want it to sound like, yeah, it can be done. It can be done, but with the help of the Lord, because, you know, the Lord perseveres with us. He perseveres with us. And so I would encourage parents not to give up on difficult children, children that don't want to obey, children that want their own way. I remember when Elizabeth was about 8, she was whining. She was manipulative. I had done probably too much. Yes, not probably. I was doing too much dealing, working out things with her, trying to help her be happy. And I remember one day thinking, it is not about Elizabeth's happiness. It is about teaching her obedience and respect. And my husband had said to me in that same year, Val, you let Elizabeth argue with you way too much. And I knew he was right. So I began to say, it helped me to say this as well as it helped Elizabeth to hear, I am the mother, Elizabeth. You cannot whine and fuss and get your way. Mama said no. And to keep it simple like that, you know, instead of trying to make deals or saying, if you do this, then you can do this. And if you don't get this, then it's just too difficult for young children to follow through on a reasoning like that, on a dealing things. I think they need clear commands and they need clear, quick punishment that is not, and what my daughter and her husband are doing right now with Jackson is they are putting him on a chair, which I had suggested too, and setting a timer for a certain amount of time if he's throwing a fit. They put him there and they say, you can't throw a fit at the table. You can't throw a fit if we tell you we're going upstairs. And so he sits there. He's for a couple of times he would cry, but the other times he just sat there realizing this was his punishment. And when the timer rang, he was happy, got down and did what he was supposed to do. So it just takes mom and dad talking to each other about what is a good consequence, you know, that's reasonable. I would not advocate beating at all. I just truly believe that the child has to have some kind of hurt to see that their disobedience has a consequence. So if it's hurt by being left on a chair, I used to have a whining chair. If they were whining too much, they had to sit on the whining chair until the fussiness was gone. And that worked. It was great. But direct disobedience, direct disrespect really has to be dealt with pretty seriously. If it's allowed when they're little, it gets worse and worse, especially as teenagers.
Valerie Shepherd, she'll be joining us again later for more thoughts on discipline and perseverance in this sometimes difficult parenting role. Right now, though, let's get to part 8 of The Call to Motherhood, Obedience to the Call.
I had a letter from an earnest woman who said, "Should I have more children? Is birth control in keeping with God's scheme of things or just an invention of the 1950s? Am I being irresponsible by not using contraceptive means, or am I distrusting of the Lord's grace by considering it?" And I admitted in my reply to this lady that it is a very hard question, and one with which many who are very serious about doing the will of God continue to struggle. First of all, I'd like to remind you that Jesus said, "Whoever receives a child in my name receives me." Secondly, I want to say that I really do not know the answer, but I can say some things which have come to me as helpful, and I would hope you would be willing to consider if this is a question that concerns you. I would never get into the question of how many children should you have. If you've already got 8 children and you're saying to me, "Should I have more?" my natural inclination would be to say, "Oh my goodness, no, you've got more than enough now." But how would I know? After all, Susanna Wesley had 19 children, of which I think 10 survived to past a very young age. I've forgotten just what the statistics were there. But there have been a good many very large families in history, and who am I to say that God doesn't want you to have a large family, or who am I to say that God does want you to have a large family? If you've got 2 children and you're asking, "Should I have more?" I cannot possibly answer the question. But I do want to give you some principles which I feel are important that we consider. And the first of these is that God's first commandment to Adam and Eve was, "Be fruitful and multiply." In other words, the divine plan for marriage is children. Marriage and fruit bearing are inseparable in God's mind. I do not believe that a Christian couple ought to choose not to have any children at all. It seems to me disobedience to the principle of marriage. Love is meant to bear fruit. Secondly, I believe that couples must hear God's call to parenthood and may not opt out of that responsibility. It is a responsibility to Him, to family, to society, and to each other. A woman has a responsibility to enable her husband to be a father, and a father has a responsibility to enable his wife to be a mother. Number 3, to refuse to transmit life is to act against nature, the nature of both man and woman as God designed it, and it is to ignore His plan. Now let me read those first 3 again. The first commandment was to be fruitful. Marriage and fruit bearing go together in God's mind. Secondly, couples must hear God's call to parenthood, and they may not opt out of this responsibility to Him, to family, to society, and to each other. And thirdly, to refuse to transmit life is to act against nature, the nature of both man and woman, and to ignore His plan. We have to remember that throughout most of human history, there has never been any very effective means of contraception other than abstinence. And when I lived with jungle Indians, I discovered that abstinence was practiced among them. In fact, it was almost unthinkable for an Indian woman to give birth more than every 2 years. I had Indian women sometimes asking me, how do missionaries do it? They managed to have a child every year. And there was a family living on the same station with me for a while who had succeeded in producing 6 children in just under 7 years. And the Indians felt that this was quite mysterious, and they wondered how they managed it. Well, of course, I asked the Indians a few questions about how they managed not to have children more than every 2 years, and they didn't have any answer other than, well, you just don't sleep together. Most of human history, there has not been a very effective means of contraception. It is only in the 20th century that various mechanical and chemical methods have been devised and propagated, and women generally had to receive what God gave them, willingly or not. But now new technology has made more choices, and Christians have to face these choices. My answers are not inspired, and as I said, they are not final, but I do offer these suggestions for your prayerful consideration. The fourth thing that I would like to suggest is what's called natural family planning, which takes advantage of the marvelous physiological mechanism that God designed into the woman's menstrual cycle. It differs from the mechanical and chemical means in that it requires self-control, sacrifice, and cooperation. If you're interested in natural family planning, there are plenty of materials on that subject, but I'm sure most of you know that what I'm talking about is taking advantage of the cycles of fertility and non-fertility. One of the things which to me sets this apart from all the other methods is that it makes the husband and wife not the arbiters, but the ministers of this matter of conceiving. They are no longer the arbiters, but they are the ministers. Mechanical means are ways of simply arbitrating that you will not have children, unless by divine intervention God sees to it that those methods don't work, and of course God can do that. But by using the physiological mechanism which has been built into the human body, we are thereby ministers. But it does require self-control and sacrifice and cooperation of both of the parents, which to me is very important. We are not impeding a natural process so much as we are using a divine gift. Having said that, though, I must in all honesty say, yes, but it's a divine gift which has never been known for thousands of years of human history. It's one which is quite complicated. It involves thermometers and very close examination and a lot of complicated things which not very many people can do without a lot of education. But let me also say that love is the willingness to be inconvenienced. When I hear young couples say, well, we're waiting until we have a convenient time to have a baby, I have news for that couple. I say, you know, there isn't any such thing. There's no such thing as a convenient time. Children are an inconvenience, let's face it. Love bears fruit. Love accepts. Acceptance means abandonment. And abandonment is the great risk of great lovers. An awesome power is given over when you love somebody. That person then is given the power to hurt you. Love means vulnerability. Love means pain. Remember that the prophet Simeon told Mary that a sword would pierce her soul. Mary had opened her doors to suffering when she said, "Behold the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto me according to thy word." After having accepted the love of a man, will you then shut your doors to suffering and be safe by not having children? Are you going to live a convenient life a life of freedom, a life of selfishness. Discipleship means abandonment, radical obedience. It means the willingness to walk a lonely road. And I know that my daughter, who has 6 children now, has received criticism, even from Christians who feel that there's something immoral about producing so many children in a world where population is doubling every 30 years or so. But who are we to say how many children God wants another family to have? A Christian has no immunity from criticism. I'm convinced that nothing calls for a deeper humility, a clearer recognition of our inadequacies and our helplessness, or a stronger faith than parenthood. The choice to become parents is going to call for humility, for recognition of inadequacy and helplessness. It will put us on our faces before God. Will you refuse the risk? C.S. Lewis wrote to his friend Sheldon Van Auken, who had denied the privilege of motherhood to his wife, "Christians would, of course, agree that man and wife are one flesh. They would perhaps admit that this was most admirably realized by Jean and you. But surely they would add that this one flesh must not, and in the long run cannot, live to itself, any more than the single individual. It was not made, any more than he, to be its own end. It was made for God, and in him for its neighbors, first and foremost among them the children it ought to have produced. The experience of a woman denied maternity is one you did not and could not share with her. To be denied paternity is different, trivial, in comparison." So those are points for you to ponder with reference to the call to motherhood.
Part 8 in the Call to Motherhood series, Obedience to the Call of Motherhood. Well, before we go, let's hear again from Valerie Shepherd, Elizabeth's daughter, as she talks about the need to persevere, even when it's not easy being a parent.
I said, "Oh, Mama, I could never raise children the way Grandma and Grandpa Howard did, her parents." And she said, "Val, they were an unusual couple, and in every couple, there's individual gifts, and so every family is going to be different. The most important thing is to teach obedience and respect to your children. That is very, very, very important." And of course, I'm dealing with seeing my own children now, trying to teach their children obedience. Our oldest grandchild is 15. She's a lovely young girl, very gifted in both music and art. And Elizabeth, her mother, and her husband, Matt, have done well at teaching their children to obey. And I do really strongly encourage moms, don't read everything that's on the internet about how to parent. It's really about following God's principles. So Proverbs is still a wonderful book in teaching how to parent. The young other children are very young. The oldest in the States is 4 years old, and the others are younger. So we're watching and praying all the time. I would say my own struggle with being consistent had to do a lot with my own spontaneous personality. Some days wanting to be very disciplined, and other days wanting to just say, "Oh, forget it, it's too hard." But it takes real serious commitment to train to teach our children obedience. And I would just encourage moms and dads who have children at home, don't give up, no matter how difficult the child is.
Thank you for continuing this difficult and rewarding job of parenthood. Well, our time is coming to an end. Thanks for letting us come into your home, your office, along with you as you took that walk or drive, wherever we found you today. On behalf of the Elizabeth Elliott Foundation, in cooperation with the Bible Broadcasting Network, let me invite you to check out elizabethelliott.org. More Gateway to Joy programs, devotionals, videos, and more. That's elizabethelliott.org. Hey, thanks for your feedback. Let us know what you're thinking about this time together. Until next time, may God remind you daily, you're loved with an everlasting love, and underneath are the everlasting arms.